this is episode 12, I think, of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We are back again to do our recap of season 2, episode 5, and episode 6. It's only been a few days for us since our last recording. Hopefully they'll be about a week apart for you, but yeah, we're very fresh off our last recording. So we're going to get straight into it. As usual, you can contact us on Twitter, Tumblr, and our email address, which, if you don't know by now, is natwpodcast on Twitter, natwpodcast@gmail.com, and the full word, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. So, yeah, hit us up, as usual, if you have feedback or ideas for the next episode, or just in general want to say anything about Teen Wolf or anything else, really. That's all cool. The first episode up is Venomous, episode 2.05, so take it away, Karen.
Okay, Jackson is working out at the school with Danny spotting him. He's upset that he can't lift more weight, and Danny, who's annoyed that Jackson is pushing himself too hard, leaves him to take a shower. Erica then comes in and kidnaps Jackson, bringing him to Derek so they can test him with the Kanima's venom to see if Jackson is the Kanima. The venom paralyzes Jackson, so Derek concludes that he isn't the Kanima. After being coerced by Isaac, Jackson tells the sheriff that Isaac and his father weren't having an argument the night of his murder, so Isaac is allowed to come back to school. Meanwhile, Styles recounts his findings on the Kanima with Scott, saying the only thing he found was that it's a were-jaguar from South America that goes after murderers. Throughout the day, we see Jackson continue to have super hearing and Lydia having hallucinations of seeing Peter still alive. On Derek's orders, Erica and Isaac decide to test Lydia during chemistry class. Despite Scott, Styles, and Allison doing their best to keep her safe, Isaac manages to slip her the venom. When she's not affected, Derek assumes she's the Kanima. Styles, Scott, and Allison then try to figure out a way to keep Lydia safe. At the same time, Danny and Matt help Jackson try to recover the video. Matt asks Jackson if anyone else can get into his house that would know how to delete the footage. Jackson suspects that Lydia was the one to do it. Allison gets the guidance counselor to translate the Latin from the bestiary, and she says that the Kanima seeks a friend. Matt realizes that whenever he takes pictures of Scott, his eyes cause a lens flare. Styles, Jackson, and Allison get Lydia out of the school and away from Derek, taking her back to Scott's house. The tape Danny was recovering finishes, and although he doesn't notice, we see Jackson sit up in bed with glowing eyes. Back at Scott's house, Isaac enters and attacks them, trying to get to Lydia. Scott comes to their rescue and throws Erica and Isaac out of the house. Derek says he realizes why Scott keeps refusing him, and that's because he's already an alpha of his own pack, referring to his human friends. It's at the very end of the episode that it's revealed Jackson is the Kanima. So what were your two favorite lines from this episode?
The first one I really loved was after Isaac made Jackson go to the cops and, you know, take him basically off the suspect list for his father's murder so he can go back to school or not be a fugitive or whatever. And Jackson is sort of having his interview with Sheriff Stilinski, and he's saying, well, so now you're saying you didn't see that happen? And he was like, not exactly. And Sheriff says, not exactly or no? Because when it comes to law, there's a fairly large divide between not exactly and no. Like, if not exactly was sitting in this chair, then no would be somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean drowning next to my career. And I was just like, that was such a beautiful monologue. I want it imprinted on my brain because it's just, it's so, and I'd totally forgotten it since last time I watched it as well. It was not one of the ones that I'm like, oh, that's a funny one line. I'd totally forgotten about it, and it was so good. And I was just like, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, that very nearly made it onto my list too. That's definitely one of my favorites from the episode.
Mm. And the second one is when Styles is talking to Isaac about not attacking Lydia, and Isaac's kind of flippantly, you know, saying about how he wants to ask Lydia out and she rejected him, and Styles is like, unrequited love's a bitch, maybe you should write about it in English class, you know, channel all negative energy. And Isaac just says, I was thinking I would channel it into killing her. I'm not very good at writing, and I just, I'm not very good at writing, it just was like, Again, it was similar to the last episode where he's like, oh, you know, a bit tired of being a fugitive, but other from that, can't complain. I really dislike Isaac at the moment, but he is hilarious. Like, those, yeah. Those kind of throwaway little lines are so funny, and it was really great.
This is really funny because that one almost made it onto my list, too. I think we're, like, definitely on the same wavelength here. My favorite ones, the first one comes from Coach, of course, and this is when he stops Scott and shows him the lacrosse equipment that's sort of torn up and everything, and they figure out that it's Danny's, and so he tells Scott, tell your friend Danny to take care of his equipment, or I'm going to make you take care of his equipment, and do you really want to be taking care of Danny's equipment all the time? And then Scott sort of just says, that depends. Are we still talking about lacrosse pads? Oh, Coach.
Yeah, that was brilliant. There was that one, and there was another Coach one that I had on the list originally, but I'm like, this is really inconsequential. Like, it means literally nothing in the context of the show. And it was the bit where he was like, this midterm is so difficult that I'm not actually sure that I could pass it. And I was just like, that was so funny. But this bit was, yeah, it was really like, once again, the show, I'm sorry, yeah, Steric, whatever. Why don't more people ship Scott and Danny? Because there's so many outright references to it that it's like, I don't know, I can't even, I love it. But yeah, it's just really funny to me, like, because the way that Scott said it, like, that depends, are we still talking about his lacrosse pads? Was like, I don't know, it was just really... He was like the lacrosse pads would be the negative option, and like the other equipment would be the positive option. That was kind of like how his delivery was, and I'm like, is that what you're trying to say? I'm not sure, but yeah, I really, really enjoyed that scene also.
My second one was near the end of the episode when Allison and all the others are in the house, and Isaac and Erica have already gone in there. And Erica opens the door, and Allison is standing there with her crossbow, and they kind of banter back and forth for a little bit, and Allison shoots at Erica, and Erica catches the arrow and says, did you really think that was going to work? And Allison's sort of just like, yeah, actually I did. And come to find out that the arrow has the venom from the Canima on it, so Erica sort of just falls over, and she's paralyzed, and Allison leans down and sort of just, you know, takes the hair away from her face and says, I thought you were psychic, bitch. And it was just perfect. I loved it. I loved the way she said it and how she was so calm about it, because you knew she was, like, mad at Erica for wanting to steal Scott away from Allison and everything. And it was just, like, the perfect little moment for Allison.
Yeah, I mean, God, Erica is so nasty. Again, I'll get to this, but yeah, it was really, like, really intense. And, like, every time you sort of look at Allison, you almost forget that she's not... You always expect her to be, you know, the girlfriend that's being protected or whatever, the one at risk and, you know, all of that kind of thing in a typical show, you know. But she never is, and it's like... And I almost keep forgetting that, and, like, every time she does something like that, it always surprises me in a good way, because she's not, yeah. She's not like a tough girl either. She's not like a, I don't mean that in like looks wise or whatever, like, but she's not one of those like, you know, brash fighter kind of, you know, attitude-y girls. She's a nice girl who also happens to be really, really awesome at this kind of thing. I really like that contrast. It's like really complex, and it's not playing really into any stereotypes. So yeah, I always appreciate Allison more than I remember that I do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm actually exactly right there with you too, because I remember, I mean, I always liked Allison. There was nothing, you know, negative about her until the end of the season, but you can't really blame her for that. But she was never one of my favorite characters, just because I liked some of the other ones so much more. And now that I'm rewatching it, I'm like, Allison's pretty cool chick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she can handle herself.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get into our discussion points now, and this one, I'm not sure, did we already talk about this, the fact that the sheriff still wears his wedding ring?
I'm not sure, I can't remember if we've discussed it before or not. I'm not too surprised at that, like, I feel like that's something that people do when their partner has died. I don't know personally, but I feel like that's something that if you regularly wore a wedding ring while you were married and it wasn't that you ended the relationship by choice, that he still considers himself to be married, I guess, though his wife is dead. I don't know. It might become a thing if we see him move on at any point or date anyone, but yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was going with it. First of all, do we know how long ago Sal's mother died?
No, and I mean, it's easy to get it a bit mixed up, but no, I don't think we do. Most people seem to think that it was like mm-hmm. 10 or younger, like more than 5 to 10 years ago, but there's no record of it. I don't think it was like a year ago, if you know what I mean. I feel right. like that he's used to it enough by now that it's not that recent, but
mm-hmm.
he also clearly had like a long and firm relationship with her, so yeah, you'd think he would be old enough to remember quite clearly. So like somewhere between the age of like 7 or 8 and 12 or something like that, maybe, but that's just from assessment. I don't think it's ever been stated at all.
Right. Yeah, I was just wondering, because usually, I mean, I can totally understand somebody keeping their wedding band on if it's been even a couple of years, but any more than that, I would sort of think that they would stop wearing it. But, you know, you never know. Everybody's affected differently. But I'm definitely interested in seeing if that's going to be a thing next season, because, you know, everybody always ships Scott's mom with him and everything. And if he does start to go out on dates, I wonder how Styles is going to handle that and if the wedding ring's going to come off. And it's just something I picked up on that I thought, could be
true.
Interesting for next season.
I'm gonna just put a bullet point in here and just say that, like, there's this thing that, like, literally in, like, Teen Wolf fandom, and if I'm reading fan fiction, it happens, and I'm just like, you've just literally ruined this fan fiction for me by including this stupid background pairing. Sorry, no offense if this works for you, but there is this contingent of people who insist on shipping Chris Argent and Stilinski together, which I'm just like, no, like, no.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's not a problem, like, with, it's the, you know, we're straight or whatever characters. I just hate it. I just hate it as a pairing, and it is the worst thing I've ever heard of. And if you were going to ship, I'm sorry, we'll probably do a whole episode about fanfiction and shipping and who could work together. But if you were going to ship Chris Argent with another adult male, you do it with Peter Hale. Like, that is who I would ship him with, because that would be hilarious. Not that I actively look for, like, any fanfiction about Chris Argent, actually, but you see these background fanfictions about the pack where it's like, oh, Styles' dad and his, you know, new husband, Chris Argent. And I'm like, no, go home. Please stop ruining. Like, this was a perfectly good fanfiction until you put this stupid pairing in. And now I don't want to read it. And yeah, this is something me and my friends have talked about, some of the fandom-y people I know with Teen Wolf, and I just hate it as a pairing. So no offense if there are people out there that like it, but it's really bad. Sorry. So yeah, I don't think that we're going to see him start dating Chris Argent, but maybe him, you know, next season. Though, you know, they are all going to be singles now, him and Scott's mum and, you know, Chris Argent. Maybe they could have a fight over Scott's mum. Maybe Peter Hale could come too, you know. Maybe they could all have like a, you know, who's going to date Scott's mum competition. I don't know. Somehow I don't see Chris Argent getting over his marriage too easily either, though. Anyway, I'm sure if that little discussion, you know, interested you, I'm sure we can do an episode, a bite-sized at some point, about shipping and the different dynamics that might or may not work for people. Okay, my first thing, it's like, when Derek decided to test Jackson and Lydia with the Canima's venom, we know already that Derek doesn't know anything about the Canima. It was a rumour, he'd only vaguely heard of it, he was kind of like, he only just figured out that this was what it was. Did he just, like, make up the idea of testing them with their own, like, with its venom? Like, or is he, I mean, he said that, you know, it was based on a logic, like, that a snake can't be poisoned by his own venom, but he has no facts that this is, like, going to work for the Canima, that this is, like, something that would actually be a viable test, if you know what I mean. So, but he's walking around saying it with all this authority, like he knows what he's talking about. So why is he doing that when he actually doesn't know anything about what he's talking about? And he's literally just, if he said, like, oh, maybe this would be an experiment that we could try, and it might be something that would work, and then if it doesn't work, we'll have to take it from there. But why is he talking like that? This is a fact when he doesn't know it's a fact?
I really don't know. I mean, throughout this whole episode, he's made a lot of assumptions, and, I mean, obviously he was wrong, but, you know, like, the whole thing about the immunity, and, you know, he'd never heard about it before, therefore it's not possible, and, you know, he wouldn't even listen to Scott, who was actually being quite logical, and he was just like, no, we know that it's Lydia, and we're gonna kill her now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's insane. I don't understand that. I guess to tie into that, I actually wanted to kind of clarify something that I was a bit confused about. It's like, first of all, like, hadn't we already established that Lydia was immune? So why would they be surprised that the cannabis stuff didn't work on her? And then I was like, it had the bit at the end where Derek didn't know that Lydia had the immunity. So to clarify, Derek doesn't know... Derek didn't consider it because he apparently didn't know Lydia was immune, even though he knows that she got bitten by Peter. Doesn't she? Didn't he see her in the hospital? Like, I thought that he knew that. So he didn't know that there was something up with her, even though she got bitten by Peter. The thing is, okay, if Derek knows that Lydia got bit by Peter and that Jackson got bit by him, and that neither of them are werewolves, and that their one is a Canema, then he's gonna know that there's something wrong with the other one, if you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
So I don't understand how he didn't take that into consideration, but then we also apparently didn't know that Scott didn't know that Jackson got the bite. Like, I presumed that all parties present knew all of these facts, like, that Scott knew that Jackson got the bite, because he seemed to say that with surprise, and that two kids bitten, and that one of them may be the Canema, but that the other one was also not a werewolf, but yet he was really shocked to hear about the immunity. So I don't know what was going on in that whole thing, but I was under the presumption that everyone knew everything, and apparently they didn't, so...
Yeah, I kind of took it as, like, I remember, I think it was at the end of season one, where they realized that Lydia, Stiles and Scott, realized that Lydia wasn't changing, and that she wasn't healing, and they sort of said, well, if she's not a werewolf, then what is she? And I think that's what they were sort of thinking about, not that she was immune, but that she might be something else. I mean, Canema or otherwise, but...
Yeah.
Also, Jackson was the one that sort of came up with the theory that maybe she was immune because he was watching that video in his science class. Mm.
But they knew that... I'm just a bit stuck on the fact that there were two of them that got bitten and that two of them weren't werewolves. So what they thought was going on besides that, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. It was very confusing. The other bit in that scene, both you and I have made a point about, which is that when Scott realises that Derek gave Jackson the bite, saying, oh, it could turn him or kill him, and you would hope it would kill him, and Boyd's like, what? It could have killed him? Kind of thing. Like, and I was like, oh, you didn't get told that, did you? So, first of all, why did Derek want to kill Jackson, like, when he was still just an annoying human? And two, what do you think about Boyd and all of that?
I mean... It's hard to argue against the fact that it did seem like Derek was hoping Jackson would die, but I don't see Derek as being a murderer like that. I mean, why would he... I mean, obviously he's putting people's lives in danger by giving them the bite, but I don't think he actually honestly hoped that Jackson would die. I mean, sure, the kid's annoying, Derek didn't like him very much, but did he really want to kill him?
Yeah, like, why did he was like, oh, I'm going to get you out of the way. Is it because he knew about the werewolves and he didn't want anyone to know about the werewolves?
Why not just break his neck or something? It would have been a lot easier, quicker.
Maybe he was hoping it would be, like, that he couldn't be blamed for killing him, if you know what I mean? That it wasn't a proper murder if he was giving him the...
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's like, you know, maybe it's like when they give you, like, morphine in the hospital and they're like, so there is a risk that this could kill you, but if you want it as a painkiller, you can have it, kind of thing. I don't know, like, why... I don't know. Derek, stop being so questionable. It's really weird. Like, I don't know why he wanted to kill Jackson, like, except for getting the, you know, keeping the secret. And Jackson has kept the secret pretty well. Like, is it within a werewolf's right to, like, eliminate a human as a threat if the human isn't a hunter and directly you know, if a human knows about them, does that mean, oh, that human has to go? Like, is that what we're doing now? I don't understand.
The thing is, though, I don't really see Derek as doing that. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously his morals are questionable right now, but it's really surprising to me that he would legitimately be like, okay, I'm going to give you the bite and hope that it kills you.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
And
but
then poor Boyd.
About Boyd, yeah. I mean, he was surprised. He definitely didn't know that it could kill him. And this makes me wonder about Derek, too, like, that he was worried he wouldn't accept the bite if he knew that.
Mm.
I mean, he's being a little bit manipulative here, but
yeah.
Boyd definitely looked surprised.
Yeah. Oh. And, I mean, again, that ties into, like, me thinking that Boyd would be very much one to break away from Derek. And, I mean, I guess he does, like, by the end of the season, not to be too specific, but by the end of the season, Derek is all alone in the darkness, being sad once again. So, I'm curious, you know, Boyd breaks away, and I don't know if that could be the start of it, like, if that could be the start of sort of not trusting Derek, but, yeah, I don't think Derek knows how to do people very well, which isn't a shock to anyone, but, oh my god, I don't think I realised the first time I watched it that Boyd did react like that, but, yeah, it was very, very obvious this time, and and I feel bad for him, and I'm glad that he didn't accidentally die.
Yeah. Okay, so my next point is about Harris. And, Harris. Okay.
I know.
So he's going on this whole speech in the classroom. I don't even remember what half of it was about anymore, but basically at the end of it he says, "And I've encountered infinite stupidity." And he sort of just pats Stiles on the back. And I seriously have to know why Harris hates Stiles so much. I mean, he's a good student. He's a smart kid. Is Harris, like, intimidated by him?
Yeah. This is my thing as well, because I'm like, is this an inconsistency? Because we know that Stiles gets really good grades. Like, the complaint with his stuff is never his grades. So is it, like, based, does Harris say it, like, based on Stiles, just Stiles' behavior, or what is his problem? Like, I don't understand. And then Stiles and Scott in that class do end up with that mess of grossness, which I presume wasn't Stiles' fault if he's smart. But
yeah.
but yeah, me too. I was watching it going, but Stiles isn't stupid.
Yeah.
It's not even like, oh, he's bad at school, but he's secretly good at life. He's good at school. So what is the problem here exactly? Maybe it's his acting up or whatever, but maybe Harris is just, oh my god, I know what it is. And it's not good. I know it's not good. Harris is in love with him. And he hates himself for being a teacher-student pedophile.
That's what, though? That actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because remember he went to the rave and he was with a girl?
Yeah, this is why I said it. This is why I'm saying it. Harris is a creeper. Harris is a creeper. This is it. This is it. This is my theory. And he resents himself for loving Stiles.
Oh, I don't know if I can handle that.
No, I hope that's not it either, but there's my theory. Apparently that's the way to go when I, you know, just in the same way. God, we've got so much. We've had Kate and Derek, we've got Coach and Greenberg, you know, Greenberg's clearly in love with Coach. Too much student teacher stuff in this show. It's a bit disturbing. sorry. The other thing I was going to say was, last episode, I kind of came up with this idea, or I said came up with in inverted commas, because I'd sort of forgotten that this happened in the next episode, but that, you know, I was like, maybe the Canima isn't always the lizard, and it's, you know, that's why Derek didn't recognise it. Maybe the Canima is an idea, not a form, like someone's Patronus, like it exists as a thing, but it could be different to different people. In this, the description Stiles finds is of a weird jaguar, like someone who turns into a jaguar type of creature, and that it's a shapeshifter. And Derek later says, you know, with the Canima, that sometimes the shape you take reflects the person that you are, when he's talking about something going wrong with a shapeshifter, with a werewolf, and it becoming a Canima, that, you know, sometimes you get the bite and something goes wrong. And the picture in the book is of the Canima is just sort of a black creature with a tail, and it could be the lizard thing or a jaguar But what do we think so far about, yeah, the Kanema as a snake thing, or in general as a concept? What do you reckon about it now?
This still confuses me quite a bit, and I'm not sure that I interpreted Derek's words quite the same way as you did, in that when he said the shape that you take reflects the person that you are, I kind of assumed that was in general, not just with the Kanema. Like you were saying, the Kanema could be different shapes, but that the bite could make you different things. Mm-hmm. And that kind of got me thinking that, like, is the bite sort of like this general shape-shifting bite, and then, you know, some people turn into werewolves, some people turn into where something else is, and I don't know. There's not a whole lot of mythology, like, in this show specifically that we can interpret, you know, what he meant exactly by that.
Yeah, and I mean, the implication towards the end, or even the implication right now, is that werewolf is the general, like the bite from a werewolf is a general you become a werewolf bite, but that if you're not like clean and pure of heart, you don't become a werewolf, you get stuck as a Kanema because there's something fundamentally wrong with you as a human being. But I'm sorry, all of the other people who have become werewolves, there's something fundamentally wrong with some of them as human beings as well. Like, I don't understand why we haven't got a whole legion of Kanemas running around. Or is there something so bad about Jackson that he is stuck not being able to be a werewolf? Like, it's bizarre. Like, you can't just be, oh, if you're not a good person, you don't turn into a werewolf. Because some werewolves are good people, but I'm pretty sure some also aren't, in the same way that humans aren't.
Right.
Aren't good people. It kind of sounds like being a Kanema is like werewolf purgatory, and being a werewolf is like werewolf heaven. And it's like, why, what makes you so bad that you get sent to werewolf purgatory?
I don't know.
It's just really odd to me. I don't know. Like, I can't work it out. And then, I mean, because I'm still confused about what happens in the future as well. So I was just interested that, yeah, they talked about the were-jaguar, and, like, maybe that was the only person's record of it. But, yeah, maybe when someone goes all Kanema, it does make them something different depending on who they are. Again, I feel like if there was, like, every time this happened, it was, like, a lizard monster, that there'd be more records about it as well.
Yeah. So my next question was about the extent of werewolf healing capabilities, and this sort of came up when Stiles accidentally shot the crossbow at Scott, and he just barely caught it before it nailed him, like, basically right in the forehead.
Mm.
And after he caught that arrow, I was sort of just wondering, you know, how injured can they get before they can't heal at all? Like, what exactly kills a werewolf? I mean, obviously we know, like, the normal things, like the wolfsbane and that sort of thing, but as far as what injuries would normally kill a human, how can they heal from those? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, like, you know, because I think it would be like something like, you know, obviously we've seen them get cut in half, like literally their body not still attached. Maybe if you cut off their head, probably if you cut off their arm, it's not going to grow back, like we've seen with Derek in the earlier episode where he was going to get Stiles to cut off his arm. So maybe if you cut off all their limbs, or, yeah, just generally cut them up. But my thing is, like, that internal things don't seem to... Maybe if they took a bullet, like, straight to the heart and it had a certain type of thing in it, or just in general a bullet straight to the heart. But I feel like if they got shot in somewhere that was, like, the brain or the heart or the guts, like, internal organs that could be damaged, and that the item wasn't taken out. Like, so if they got an arrow in the heart and it was causing the heart to stop or damage or whatever, and it wasn't taken out, so the healing process didn't start, that would kill them. But that if you took it out quickly enough, that it would just heal up. Because Scott's got stabbed in the stomach in the last episode, and in a person that would cut open their guts and infect their entire blood system. But because the knife got pulled out again, it seems that they healed and all the infection got burned off and whatever that would cause, if you know what I mean. Like, so
yeah.
I feel like that the only thing is if they are... Yeah, literally, you know, cut up to the point that they can't live. Yeah, or that if the item is... if it's a normal wound that would kill a person and the item isn't removed so that the healing doesn't start.
Right, yeah, because I was wondering about brain damage and, like, if Scott had been shot in the head and they removed it, like, would his brain stitch back together? Or, like, if that would have killed a person immediately, would he have died immediately? Or, like, if he didn't have time to heal and he was just sort of dead, like, does that still work the same way? And if you also remember, like, with Peter, he was severely injured and he had to heal himself one cell at a time. So, I mean, it seems like very little actually does kill them, but it would just be interesting to find out what they can't heal back from.
Yeah. Like, if he got chopped through the neck, like, if he got chopped, like, in the back of the neck and it, like, severed his spinal cord and if, you know, it would knit itself back together if his head wasn't cut all the way off or something like that.
Nearly headless neck!
Yeah! God. Yeah, like that. Okay. What next? Okay, so we both have a bit about Matt and Danny, so let's do that. The thing that I wanted to say about Matt in this episode is that, God, damn you, Matt, you're so charismatic. Stop making me like you so much, because his little flirtation with Danny when they were both sort of, you know, talking to Jackson about the situation, and his little kind of back and forth with Danny, I was kind of like, my heart was fluttering for Danny, and I was like, oh my God, they're so cute, and I'm like, they're not cute, it's bad, Matt's a bad, and I know how bad he is, and I know what happens, and I still can't be like, ew, you're gross. I love him.
I know.
I'm so into every interaction he has with everyone. He just has really good chemistry with all the people. It's really stressful.
Yes, it is. Especially when he was like, we could have done it together, and he sort of just smiled, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, like, for a second I was like, oh, they're so cute. No, bad.
Yeah, I know. Bad. This is me as well, and it's like, this is not good. But, I mean, it just shows how good an actor he is, I guess, or how charismatic as a person he is, because, oh, so good.
Yeah, my thing with Danny and Matt was, like, is Danny the only person that noticed Matt is obsessed with Allison? And if so, like, is this because he has a crush on him and he's been paying attention? Or does Danny just sort of, like, notice things in people? Is that just part of his personality?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't expect Jackson to notice things like that, because Jackson doesn't really pay attention to anyone except himself. Unless it's, you know, someone who's got something better than him. But I don't know why he was so noticing that. And, you know, does Scott know that? Like, is it known that Matt likes Allison? Because, you know, we do see a bit more of them together in later episodes, but I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to make a secret of it or not, really.
I don't think anybody else knows. Other than the fact that we've been seeing him taking pictures of her, we wouldn't really have known either. And that just sort of makes me believe that Matt isn't putting it out to the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It kind of surprised me, too, that Jackson looked so worried when Danny said that he was, like, actually concerned about Allison. At least that's sort of what I took it as.
Yeah. No, I agree. We shall have to see, because I can't remember if more stuff is revealed about how much people know about him and Allison, but they definitely have more stuff going on, so we'll have to wait and see. Okay. Erica and Isaac, in this episode, are both at the height of profound unlikability, because they're just both nasty, smug, horrible people right now. And obviously they both, you know, change from that, and we talked a bit about in the last episode about why that would happen, but just like in the last episode, you know, Derek sort of got knocked off his perch. He was kind of the worst he's ever been in episode 3, and then he kind of came down a bit Erica and Isaac in this are so horrible that I really enjoyed when the team sort of beat them down and when Allison did her trick with the venom and when Scott threw them out on the street. But first of all, like, why does Erica want Scott so much? Like, their behaviour in the classroom in the chemistry experiment when everyone was all switching desks, which, by the way, was such a good storytelling device. It's like, how are you going to get, like, how are we going to set this up so that everyone gets to talk to each other and, you know, they're trying to get to Lydia. Such a clever kind of concept to do, to have that kind of switching experiment partners thing. But why does Erica want Scott? Like, why does she say those disgusting things to Allison? Like, who does that? Who, like, no matter how hard your life has been, what kind of person is like, I know this is later, but what kind of person is like, I've always wondered what it feels like to steal someone's boyfriend? I've never sat there and wondered that. I'm not that nice. I'm okay. But I'm not that nice a person. I'm pretty cynical, like I'm pretty judgmental, I'm pretty mean sometimes. But I don't sit there going, oh, what would it be like to steal someone's boyfriend? Like, I'm not cruel. So do you think Erica is naturally cruel? Like, what is going on with that? Like, and then Isaac was also just horrid. So yeah, what do we think there?
Well, first of all, I don't think Erica wants Scott. I think Erica just wants to get back at Allison. I mean, not get back
what
at her.
Has Allison done anything?
No, but I mean, I think that it's more about Allison than it's about Scott. You know what I mean? And I think now that Erica's all, you know, juiced up and everything with the werewolf, whatever, that she's sort of just trying to take over, and she must feel intimidated by Allison. So I'm thinking that maybe she's just doing whatever she can to cause as much trouble as she can, because now she's able to.
Yeah. It's just a very bizarre thing to me for anyone to want to do or think like that. And like, no matter how much they feel confident or whatever, it's a bit far. And I'm very confused as to where that conflict comes from. Yeah, and then Isaac was outright nasty as well, and it's just, I mean, this is a really, really, really very sort of dark comparison that I'm going to make, and I don't want people to take it the wrong way, because it is a very extreme comparison. But the way that Erica and Isaac kind of react to getting the bite and react to everything bad that's happened to them and sort of taking it back and, like, throwing it into the power that they have now and having absolutely no care about, like, I mean, they've only been werewolves for, like, 2 weeks, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll just go around and kill anyone who we want to. It reminds me of school shootings, that they feel like they now have some sort of power and they're going to use it to take it out on the stuff that they felt wronged about, if you know what I mean, as opposed to just being settled in themselves as having the power. And obviously that's a huge comparison to make, but something about like this, like, we've got something back and we're just going to, we have no qualms whatsoever about now going and being ruthless about, you know, taking out our form of pain by, you know, showing you all up by being like, I don't care who I'm going to kill, kind of reminds me of that in a very disturbing way, and I'm glad they kind of get over it. But it's just odd, like, it's like, if you've been a werewolf for, like, 3 weeks or something, it's like, surely, like, 3 weeks from, like, normal human to, you know, werewolf, just because you become a werewolf doesn't mean you're like, oh yeah, we kill people now, this is, like, what we that's fine, like, this is our life now. Surely it's a much longer process, that if you haven't been born a werewolf, surely it's a much longer process to become, like, comfortable with the apparent norms of, like, werewolves and hunting and fighting and killing people.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing surprises me how nasty they are just because they have got power. So, yeah.
My last point was about Lydia, and we sort of touched on this already with her immunity, but a question I had was, what if Lydia is not immune? What if it's something else? Because, I mean, I don't totally trust Derek when he says, like, I mean, I think he probably hasn't heard of immunity or anything like that, but
Derek hasn't heard of a lot of things. You know, what Derek hasn't heard of could, you know, fill several libraries, I'm sure.
Right, just pretends exactly.
He's heard of things. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, the question still stands, though. What if Lydia isn't immune? Could she be something else? Could she have some other sort of powers? Or, I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. I mean, I think there is a possibility that she is immune, but I also think it could be something else that we don't know of. Not an immunity, but that she wasn't... Not that she's a human that's immune, but there's something else. Maybe she's a witch or something. We don't know. You know, like, maybe she has some other aspect to her that has meant the werewolf bite didn't work on her, but that it's not as simple as that she's a human with immunity. Because, you know, it does sound like quite an improbable thing, and we will have to, you know, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. I'm sure that isn't something that will be ignored, but... I mean, I'm curious about how it ties into, like, Peter, if it wasn't her, if it was something that Peter did to her when she got bitten, if you know what I mean, that he knows something, that he did something, that if she got bit by another werewolf or whatever, it would just be a normal thing, but that he might have done something to her to make her the way she is now, as opposed to it being a coincidence that he bit her and that she's immune. That's one aspect that it could be. I don't know how or what he would do, but it kind of reminds... I mean, this is a massive spoiler, but do you know the fantasy author Tamora Pierce?
Yes.
Have you read her books?
No.
Okay. If anyone out there listening who has read her books, there is basically the end of her first series. There's... Well, in the second book of the first series, the kind of... The hero of the stories, a girl called Alana, kills this guy who was sort of her mortal enemy and who was out to kill everyone. And then in the fourth book, he comes back to life. Alana's twin brother actually brings him back to life. But the reason that he was able to do it was because that Roger, the guy, hadn't been dead in the first place. He actually put something onto himself to make it so that if he got killed, he could be brought back or whatever. And funnily enough, Ian Bowen looks literally exactly how I picture Duke Roger. I very, very rarely see an actor and I'm like, that's who that person is. And I've been reading these books for 17 years and I've never seen someone, and I saw Teen Wolf and I was like, that guy looks exactly like Roger. And then nearly the same thing ended up happening to him. But yeah, maybe he did something. Maybe he set something up so... You know, and it had to do with her. Obviously, it does have to do with her, but maybe he set something up so... And it was, and part of that was biting her, but her not being a werewolf. Like, maybe he did something to himself or to the bites or... I don't know. In general. Maybe he set... I don't know how he would do it, but perhaps it was Peter, not just Lydia as herself.
I could definitely see that happening just because Peter's so manipulative and he's always got an end game. I feel like he would definitely be one step ahead of everybody else. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I hope that we do see that next season. If there is more with Peter, I'm sure there will be. But yeah, I always want to know more about Peter. Every time he comes on the screen, my roommate's been watching it with me and I'm like even in the flashbacks where he's like torturing Lydia, I'm like... and she's like, why do you like him so much? And I'm like, he's just so cool. I don't know. He's really classy, okay? The last bit I had was just about Lydia and Jackson in Scott's house when they kind of have that really nasty fight about, you know, him suspecting that she came in and did something to the camera and, you know, asking for his key back and her lying about not having it. And... Yeah, it was all really, really intense because he's so horrible to her. Like, the fight is them really being nasty to each other and they just say these really, really horrid, like, inhumane things. And, you know, he realizes that she's lying about not having the key and he realizes that she's not lying about the tape, about, you know, not knowing where what he was talking about with the videotape. And it's like when he realizes that, he kind of... It's like he thought that up until then that them being horrible to each other and harsh to each other was that the norm, that, like, oh, I'm a bitch, you're a bitch, we're bitches together, and, you know, we're together for convenience or power, and this is just how we roll. And it seems like in that moment he kind of realizes that that's not the case, like, and then all this kind of, all that nastiness, like, drops away, and they kind of have that very emotional, like, you know, you don't hate me kind of thing, and then they kiss, and it's actually really upsetting. Like, when I watched Teen Wolf for the first time, this was the moment that, in the first time ever in the show, that I cried. Like, with that, in that bit, I was like, and I cried, and I hadn't cried up until, in the show, up until that point. And, yeah, the scene just really, really upset me, but also, it's very confusing, like, the way they act to each other and the way they talk to each other. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think about that, sort of, the way that they, I guess, the way that they treat each other, or why do you think that they sort of suddenly changed?
I don't know. I kind of wonder if it's like, you know, you've been with somebody for so long, and you kind of know all of their buttons, and you're not, like, you kind of are mean to them just because you can be. I mean, I'm not saying, like, that's a good thing, but, yeah, you know, some people are like that. And I just sort of see them as, like, this couple that's been together for a long time. And, I mean, maybe they first got together because they were both the most popular, and it was sort of, like you said, a convenience thing or a power thing. And, I mean, they obviously have feelings for each other, but I think they're so comfortable with each other that they don't have a problem being that nasty to each other because they just know each other so well.
Yeah. And then he kind of, you know, all like, oh, we're not still playing that game kind of thing anymore. We're not still just being harsh with no consequence. This isn't just how we are anymore. And yeah, it was just really, really intense and yeah, somewhat upsetting. So, I don't know, Lydia and Jackson, they're so odd. Like, it does feel really, like, real as well. But then some of it made me wonder as well whether it was, like, Jackson, how much of Jackson's emotions are because of the Kanama. Like, if he's, you know, getting, in the same way that Scott, you know, has feelings and reactions that he can't control and rage and aggression, whether Jackson's been having some of that, and whether Jackson was slightly nicer to Lydia and that they weren't quite as, you know, horrid before Scott became a werewolf, because all we've seen of Jackson is him going from averagely top dog nasty to obsessed with someone being better than him and, you know, him having all of that stress and everything like that. So, yeah, my question is basically, you know, maybe prior to Scott becoming a werewolf, which was only a couple of months before where we are now, him and Lydia were actually not as bad as we have seen them be in the show, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that might be it. That may be what is going on. That it was only in the last couple of months that it really got that deteriorating and sort of nasty and abusive, and before that they were kind of, you know, they knew the deal with each other. Even if they were outwardly nasty, they sort of knew the deal with each other. But I don't know. So in the next episode, Frenemy, Allison drops Lydia home after all the drama at Scott's place, and when Lydia demands to know what's been going on, Allison tells her that she can't explain it and that Lydia's not allowed to say anything, mainly because Allison and Scott are not actually meant to be together. Allison tries to appeal to Lydia's emotions about how Scott is so much more than just a boyfriend, but Lydia claims that she's never felt like that herself. Danny finishes restoring the footage from Jackson's full moon tape, and as we saw in the last episode, the tape shows Jackson rising up and his eyes start glowing. He then fully starts to turn into the Kanama, though Danny doesn't see it. Danny texts Jackson and says that he has the tape ready but didn't watch it, and he leaves it on his tablet in the trunk of his car. In an industrial park, Derek chases and fights the Kanama, and the Argents also show up, shooting the Kanama, which has no effect. It goes back to attack Chris, but is transfixed by Gerard until Scott jumps into the fight and knocks the Kanama away. Scott follows the Kanama to a gay club called Jungle and sees Danny there. Scott and Stiles assess that Danny is the Kanama's next target, and they break into the club to protect him. Once in the club, after a cute guy buys Scott a drink and Stiles is reluctantly adopted by drag queens, they try to get Danny, who's there to get over his ex, out before the Canema starts attacking. Scott sees it lurking in the ceiling pipes over the dance floor, and it jumps down, slashing and paralyzing everyone in its path, including Danny. The smoke machine goes off, causing confusion, and Derek shows up and slashes at Canema's throat while he's in his wolf form. Meanwhile, at her house, Lydia takes her dog into the yard, and when he runs off, he's brought back by the cute alternative guy from Morell's office in the last episode. He intensely flirts with Lydia as she asks him if there is a non-rapist reason he's in her yard, and he claims that he lives in the house behind hers. He steps towards her and is hurt when she steps back, saying he wanted to kiss her. She rejects him but seems a little interested and sasses him back instead of walking away. He ends up giving her a flower that looks like wolfsbane and tells her that if she doesn't keep it, he will be hurt. Stiles and Scott follow the blood trail of the Canema till they find Jackson in his human form and very hurt. They put him in the back of Stiles' jeep while Stiles fobs off his dad, who has arrived at the crime scene. They have an altercation where the sheriff starts to seriously suspect Stiles is doing something underhanded, but Stiles manages to convince him that they were just there to support lonely and single Danny. When Jackson starts to stir in the car, Scott apologizes to him before punching him in the face to knock him out. The Argents watch the crime scene and discuss the police's excuse, which was some bad hallucinogenic drugs, and Chris questions Gerard about the Canema's reaction to him. Gerard claims that it was intuition, and when Chris asks whether they should hold off on hunting Derek until they get the Canema, Gerard suggests letting them take each other out instead. Stiles and Scott steal a police van to hold Jackson until they know how to help or stop him, and when Jackson wakes up, he's very angry. Stiles comes to visit him with some food and tries to explain to him what's been happening. He's very honest, but Jackson still doesn't seem to believe him. Stiles, Scott, and Allison take turns watching Jackson, and when Jackson overhears one of their discussions, Stiles advocates killing him and Scott saying that they can't. They have to help him because no one else will. He starts to weep. At school, Gerard intimidates Allison about covering for her friends, and Scott talks to Danny at the hospital about the videotape he's been helping Jackson with. The group think that they've covered for Jackson's absence by texting his parents from his phone, but the parents suspect and tell the police. When Scott and Allison are watching Jackson later, they get distracted in an intense conversation about their love and future together and start to make out in Allison's car. Jackson finally starts to transform and sees himself doing it. He breaks out of the van and escapes. Allison and Stiles decide it's time to tell both of their fathers what has been going on, and Scott offers to help prove things to the sheriff, but when they get to the station, Jackson is there with his own father, looking smug and ready to press charges on Scott and Stiles. Allison goes home and finds Lydia, who demands more answers, and Allison brushes her off, saying she doesn't have time for Lydia's needs right now. She flippantly says that she needs someone to translate archaic Latin, and she doesn't have that, when Lydia tells her that she can translate it. She goes through the information on the Canema and says that Morell's translation was wrong. The Canema seeks a master, not a friend, meaning someone isn't protecting Jackson, they're controlling him. So this episode, what were your favourite lines from this?
There were a lot of them, and I had a hard time just picking two because basically the whole scene in the gay club was amazing, and I just loved it. Mm. My first one, though, is from Stiles, and I mentioned this as one of my favorite lines on our very first episode, and it's still one of my favorites when he says, "I'm 147 pounds, pale skin and fragile bone. Sarcasm is my only defense."
Yeah, I think that's one of probably the top lines in the show, like that it's one of the most classic one-liners in the whole show.
Yeah. My other one is from Victoria when she says to Allison, "We've noticed quite a few calls from your phone to the odd one, Stilinski."
I was very taken aback by that as well. The odd one. It was really funny. Poor Stiles. He is a bit odd, yeah. But poor Stiles. The first one that I really liked was near the start of the episode, which was when they were tracking down the Canema and Scott says that he thinks it has no scent, and then at the gay club, Scott says he knows where it's going, and Stiles says, "Why, did you smell something?" And Scott says, "Yeah, Armani." And then we look up and it's Danny. And I just loved it as, like, a little... Again, like, I mentioned this when it happened earlier, but in that first episode where he's testing out the lacrosse players and he's smelling people and he's on top of Danny and Danny's like, "It's Armani," about his cologne. And And then you'd never think, number one, you'd never think that they'd play that back in later. But number two, again, I just really love Scott and Danny. I'm just so obsessed with these weird little Scott and Danny references. But no, mainly I just really appreciate that they played something that small back in later, and that that interested me. And the second one was actually between Scott and Danny, which was when Scott went to the hospital to ask Danny what had been going on between him and Jackson. And he was like, has he seemed angry to you lately? You know, one, being kind of irritated, and 10, being wanting to kill you violently. And Danny's kind of like, well, Jackson's kind of always at a 4. And it just really amused me because it's like, Danny is so nice and calm and awesome, and Jackson is kind of always at a 4. And it's funny that they're such good friends, and like that they do have so much trust, and that Danny just accepts that Jackson is kind of a nutcase. And I really like it. Like, I really like Jackson and Danny's friendship because of how nice Danny is and how everyone likes Danny and no one likes Jackson, but Danny likes Jackson, and I want to know, I want to know what's happened between them that's made them, like, made Danny so, you know, that he knows Jackson so well and is so accepting of all of that, because he's not very, you know, Danny doesn't really suffer fools. Like, he doesn't really put up with people being stupid or mean or anything. So yeah, I'm curious as to Jackson and Danny's relationship and how they are. My first question about this was, is this all in one night? Like, when we see them tracking the Canima to the gay club, I can't remember the clothes they're wearing, but is this meant to be directly after they have left Scott's house in the prior episode? Like, we have Allison dropping off Lydia, so is this actually following on from the previous episode, and this fight with the Canima at the gay club is the same night that they were at Scott's house?
I think so, because the last episode was a to-be-continued one, yeah. So this is sort of supposed to be a two-parter.
Yeah.
So I think so.
That's interesting to me, because this show, it takes place in an amazingly short time span. Like, nearly every episode is only meant to be like 1 day or 2 days, and usually when we have an episode of TV that takes 1 or 2 days, that's fine and normal, but then usually by the next episode we're like a week later, if you know what I mean, like we're doing a couple of another story that happens a week later. This seems like it's all set within the same 1 or 2. I think you can, as I've said before, you can count it by the full moons. It's only set over a couple of months, and each episode takes, you know, maybe a week at most, but generally pick up right where they left off. And yeah, it's just the entire time frame of what has happened on Teen Wolf so far is very small, and that interests me. And you know, obviously we're gonna have quite a big jump coming into season 3, like a gap after it finishes, but I don't know if the next season is going to run like that as well, like if it's going to be like all in the span of a few days, or whether it's going to be more stretched out.
Yeah, I'm not sure, especially since, you know, and we'll get into this when we talk about the news, but there's supposedly not going to be any lacrosse, so I'm wondering if the whole, either they're only talking about the first half of the season, or the whole season takes place in that first few months right when they get back to school. Yeah. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, in season 1, they're going back for the first day of lacrosse, and it seems to be, they're going back to school, and it seems to be, they seem to be going back for the winter term, like after their, maybe after their Christmas break. So if lacrosse is like a winter sport, then maybe, yeah, we'll be seeing the summer, the September up until, you know, September up until December in season 3, or in the first half of season 3, when they actually, according to the school year, wouldn't be playing any lacrosse.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just not really seen a show that's done like this before, like that's really literally where you can almost timeline the days of each episode that they're so close together.
And they do it really well, too. I mean, a lot of times if you were to try to write a story that takes place over only a couple of days, it tends to feel really rushed. and not quite realistic, but they do a really good job fitting it all into the time frame that they have.
Yeah, and I feel like it is quite realistic, because if there was something like the Kanemar running around, it's not going to just, like, wait politely from week to week to go kill someone. Like, it's like, this is happening now, and we're covering this story in full now, and, you know, each episode. It kind of reminds me, well, I suppose one show that does it in an even more intense way, not that I've ever really watched it properly, is like 24, that's literally real time. The whole season is just one day or whatever of, you know, tracking what happens in real time in that 1 hour, like over a crisis period. And it's almost like that. Like it's not quite like that, but it is actually like, oh, this big drama happened over a period of 3 days. Okay, we're going to actually show you quite a lot of it, quite closely knit together. And I find that really interesting.
So, speaking of when Allison drops Lydia off, they have a little chat where Allison tells Lydia not to say anything, and Lydia's kind of like, well, that's easy because I have no idea what's going on. And Allison sort of explains how she feels around Scott, and that, you know, she can't breathe until she's with him, and she's just trying to explain to Lydia, like, don't you remember how that feels? Don't you understand? And Lydia says she's never had a boyfriend like that. And that sort of plays into what we were talking about earlier in the last episode, Venomous, the one that we just did, that, you know, what kind of relationship do Jackson and Lydia have if she doesn't feel that way about Jackson? I mean, obviously they care about each other, but is their relationship not quite as strong as we think it is by the time we reach the end of the season?
Two things. First of all, maybe Lydia is literally only this very night starting to realize how deeply she cares about Jackson, if you know what I mean, that she hadn't really actively thought about it, that their relationship hasn't been like that, but that she only privately feels like that. Or, and I mean, these aren't mutually exclusive, but even if she did always privately feel like that, maybe, you know, she mentioned never had a boyfriend like that in the sense that, like, it wasn't mutual. Like, even if she really loved Jackson and kept his key on her neck, that he wouldn't be the one waiting after class, you know, if you know what I mean, that he wouldn't have done that for her, and that it wouldn't have actually, she hasn't experienced the things that Allison has experienced because she hasn't been with someone where they've been open about how they felt about each other. So I don't know if it's that she doesn't feel that way, but I think that she just hasn't ever, like, been like that properly with someone, because her relationships have been superficial despite how she feels inside, but, you know, whether she feels more inside or not, she just doesn't act that way.
That would make sense.
My question then, my question sort of in return, which I guess can tie into Lydia as well, is about Jackson and what he wants from life emotionally. Like, there's so much in this episode about Jackson that's quite distressing, like the thing with his parents, you know, they suspect that he's been kidnapped because, you know, they get a text from him saying, I love you, and they, you know, they say he doesn't say that to us since he found out he was adopted. And then he's crying in the back of the police car when he's over here, Styles, like, being like, kill him. And Scott's like, don't you remember that I was, you know, just as ruthless and I had you guys to help me, and he doesn't have anyone. Like, and so basically Jackson's sitting in the back of the car crying because no one loves him, but he shuts other people out. What does he want? What does he want from life? And what does he want from people? Who does he want to be loved by? You know, what is he trying to achieve if he, like, doesn't want Lydia's affection? He doesn't want friends, but he's crying at the fact that he has no friends. And that he doesn't want, like, you know, he can't accept love from his parents. So, this is a very, you know, he probably needs a bucket load of therapy. But, you know, in your in your professional opinion, what does Jackson want from life? What is going on? Why is he so upset about what he hears Styles say, you know, when he's clearly done it to himself, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't really know. I mean, Jackson, is very materialistic, and I think he cares more about being the best at everything than other people. And he obviously has trust issues that I think stems a lot from being adopted. So I don't know. I think he is lonely. That's obvious. But I think he pushes people away because he doesn't trust them, and he doesn't want to be hurt again, I guess, if he thinks, that his parents died in a car crash. So that's not like,
I don't know. Do we know that he knows that for sure? Or
I want to say yes, but I don't remember exactly, but I would assume that he would probably know that. But I don't know. I mean, as far as what he wants in life, I think he just wants to be the best at everything. And obviously he's going to make enemies and not have a lot of friends because of that. And maybe he's just sort of accepting of that, but that doesn't make it any less hard to deal with the fact that you don't have any friends.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's just, again, it could be like Lydia, that he didn't realize how badly he felt until that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm just like, Jackson, what do you want? Like, what are you searching for here? Because there are things that you could have if you'd accept them instead of sitting there crying about it. So yeah, I don't know. It's difficult. It's really difficult to say, but it's very, I don't know. He's not helping himself, is he?
No.
Jackson. But yeah, I mean, even just the thing with the parents is sort of bad enough. Like, why you would be, I guess trust is one thing, I guess, but said not once in 11 years. And so how old is he now? 16 or 17. So that's like, mm-hmm. So he found, it's not like they didn't tell him until he was a teenager. They told him when he was a kid, like probably as young as possible, that he still understood, if you know what I mean. Like, as you know, so he's 6 or 7, he's like, they're like, Jackson, you're not actually our baby. We got you to look after because we wanted to have a baby and couldn't have one, or however people do this. But it's not like they kept it from him until he was a teenager or a big secret. They clearly told him quite young. And to mm-hmm. think that since that time, he hasn't said, I love you, that he's held that resentment or that kind of feeling of disconnection since then is really, that's quite a lot. Like, that's, yeah, he clearly had some issues quite young then. And it's just interesting that, that he wouldn't be accepting of it. I totally understand if he wouldn't been accepting of it if he'd found out if they'd kept it a proper secret and he was way older when he found out, but that's not the case. So yeah, it's quite startling that he's not accepted it or seen something wrong with it since then.
Yeah. So to sort of switch gears here, let's talk about Gerard for a little bit. My big thing with him was that he wasn't attacked by the Kanima, and this was the part near the beginning where Derek was chasing him, and then Chris showed up, and then Gerard showed up, and the Kanima literally just looked at him, and then Scott sort of jumped in front of him and chased after the Kanima. But why wasn't Gerard attacked? And I was looking at the scene very closely because I knew that it was coming up, and it looked like he had his hand out for the Kanima, and we know that's sort of a thing between the Kanima and whoever is controlling it, because we saw that scene where they put their hands against the glass window of the car. And so I just wonder, how much does Gerard know? And I mean, what does the Kanima see him as?
Yeah, I don't know, because it's, maybe he knows, I think that it might be a dominance thing, maybe that he knew to act in a dominant master way, like you would to a dog or something, as opposed to just, I'm fighting you kind of thing. Like, I honestly don't know why, but I don't know if he had anything going on with it at that point, but I think he did have his hand out. But oh, everything he does is so gross. Like, it's so, he clearly knows so much more than everyone else and pretends mm-hmm. he doesn't. And he's willing to, like, do anything to, again, further the selfish goals that he has. And one of, you know, I mean, one of the things is the sort of thing that he does with Allison later in the episode about being, you know, a lie detector, you know, when he kind of, you know, puts his hands on her neck and all of that. And as soon as she's like, oh, you're freaking me out, he's like, oh, you're right, that was too far. And it's like, he doesn't care about Allison. Like, we know this later on. Like, he doesn't care about Allison. He doesn't care about anyone. And he's playing this part of, like, he's pretending to have these really strong beliefs, if you know what I mean. Like, to me, now, he is pretending to have these really, really strong beliefs and these family ethics and, you know, pretending to believe in, you know, we might not think it's right, but, like, what his, you know, family historically thinks is right, and that he's trying to protect Allison and all that. It's all a lie. And, like, and he doesn't care about threatening, like, Allison. He's just using her, and it's just horrible, and he's bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know. It just really startles me, yeah, again, to, like, to watch that and be like, there's nothing about this that's, like, you even doing this because you're a hunter. You're doing this, I know why you're doing this now, and it's so, so messed up and horrible.
So speaking of Allison, one of the lines this episode was, can't I be strong and go to prom? And I just sort of thought that this was the exact definition of Allison, and it goes back to what we were saying before about how much we like Allison and how she's not just the typical girlfriend that needs to be rescued all the time. You know, she's a hunter and she's going to be learning how to use the skills that her father is teaching her. But she's also sort of, you know, she's still a girl. She still wants to go to prom. She still wants to have a boyfriend. She still likes clothes and makeup and shoes and stuff. And I think the two different sides coming together in one person, especially somebody that young and in the situation that she's in, is just a really awesome thing to see on television.
Yeah, and like you said, like we just said before, it is, I don't know if we've ever seen, like, such a contrast in a while, like, that we haven't seen someone that interesting, because you either have, like, strong girls who have, like, a real bravado to them, like, a real sort of, I'm a tough girl, I'm going to talk like a tough girl kind of thing, or girls who are the ones who just want to go to prom. And yes, you have something like Buffy, where she wanted to be normal but couldn't, but Allison is also not that extreme. Like, hers is much mm-hmm. more of a realistic dichotomy, if you know what I mean. And yeah, it is an interesting thing to see, and it's sort of quite sad as well, that bit with her and her mum. And there was actually a lot in this episode that reminded me of, you know, how realistically this show portrays teenagers. And that was kind of, like, interesting to me, that part, and the part where, the part as well where Danny was in the hospital and Scott was kind of like, you have to tell me, it's a matter of life and death. And then Danny's like, no. And he's like, what if I told you I can get you your fake ID back? And then he was like, okay. You sort of tie that into, like, Allison and Scott still risking being together, even though they factually know that their parent, you know, that Allison's parents will kill him. And it's like they're realistically, and I think this is very realistic for teenagers, not taking consequences seriously, only sort of putting what is of value to their, like, little sort of teenage lives and priorities, even when they know for a fact that the, you know, there's this crazy werewolf stuff going on. And, you know, I think that conversation with Allison and her mother ties into that as well, and that there's a lot of examples of these kids not acting like what's going on with them in the kind of, oh my God, people are actually dying, is the be-all and end-all of the world, when it is compared to the stuff they really do think is the be-all and end-all of the world, like their fake IDs or, you know, getting to go to prom. And at the end of the day, it seems ridiculous, but it is also extremely realistic in that kids don't really take serious consequences seriously if it's getting in the way of what they think is important, if you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And one of the lines that really jumped out at me was when Allison said, "We're just a bunch of teenagers. We can't handle this." Nobody says that in television shows. I mean, you have a bunch of shows where there are vampires running around and all these crazy things mm-hmm. happening, and they're just teenagers. They're just in high school. You know what I mean? And yeah. nobody questions that. You sort of have to suspend your disbelief. Mm-hmm. But when Allison said that, it was sort of like, thank you. You know, you are just a bunch of kids. Like, you need to go tell an adult what's going on. And it's just, like you said, really realistic and refreshing and different. And it's one of the reasons why I enjoy the show so much.
Yeah. And, I mean, to tie into that bit as well, with Styles, you know, Allison and Styles are both like, right, we are going to have to just, this has gone too far now. We need to actually come clean about it. And Allison telling her dad is no big deal because obviously he already knows about the world, but Styles says he's going to tell his dad, and we know that he doesn't, obviously, yet, but because as they're about to, Jackson serves them with a restraining order, even though he now knows for a fact what's going on as well, which is horrible. Should Styles and Scott have gone ahead and told the sheriff anyway, do you think, like, in that circumstance? Because we know they don't, but do you think that they should have?
I think they didn't really get the chance, but I would have liked to see them tell him. I think it's important that he knows because he'll be able to, I mean, he has more power than they do and more resources at his dispense. So I think having him aware of what's going on and on their side is going to be really beneficial to them.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's getting to the point where I'm really upset about Styles and his dad's relationship. Like, in this episode where they were at the gay club and his dad fully, like, lays into him about, you know, not knowing who Styles is anymore and all of that kind of thing. And then Styles actually makes up a complex lie. I mean, he's lied to him a lot of times, but he actually makes up a complex lie that sort of paints him in a really positive light, and you can also kind of tell that he hates himself for that. Yeah, you can tell that he kind of hates himself for that, for like painting himself in that positive light and all of that. It's going to be such a relief when he knows the reasons behind everything, and that he knows that it isn't Styles' fault, like that Styles isn't lying to him, and that Styles hasn't, you know, like when he knows the truth about, you know, Jackson serving them with the restraining order and everything like that. And like, it's just going to be so much better for my brain and for Styles' brain, obviously, but it's getting to the point where it is quite upsetting between them now.
Yeah.
Speaking of the gay club, that whole thing was just, sure was it something, wasn't it?
Like, yeah. It was awesome.
Everything about it was just, like, so funny. Like, Scott and the guy at the bar and Styles being all just annoyed and I love Styles.
Him and his drag queen.
I love that, and I love that they come up again, and that's a really big thing in fandom, that, like, his relationship with, like, one of the drag queens is, like, being her as his, like, off-screen confidant who, you know, he, like, reveals everything to about stresses in his life and stuff, like his little friend that he has to go to being, like, my friends all are terrible, terrible, terrible people, and I want more drag queens and Styles, you know. They are yeah. amazing. And then the bit with the conversation with his dad about, you know, you're not gay. And he's like, I could be. Again, yeah, that's something
that... He was offended.
Yeah, that's something... He was offended. And it's you know, how often do you see a 16-year-old boy being offended that his father doesn't think he's gay? It's, like, pretty nice. Like, it's fantastic. And it's just... The good thing about this show is all of that kind of stuff is done so smoothly that you don't really stop to go, oh my god, that's a big deal, even though it is, and that's kind of a really good thing in the sense of that's how it should be. Like, we shouldn't be stopping to go, that's a big deal, in shows about, you know, that are portraying things like this. We should be, you know, taking that as the norm, and the fact that this show treats it like the norm instead of saying, hey, isn't this a big deal, is really cool. Like, because I think that's the best way to approach anything that you want to be accepted, is to just treat it like it's normal and show yeah. people treating it like it's normal. And so, yeah, I always appreciate that. Oh, the other The other thing that I totally forgot to mention, which I'll just throw back into that conversation about people and their priorities, teenagers and their priorities, was the one bit that the first time I watched this episode I was really like about was when everyone got paralyzed at the club and Scott comes to ask Danny if he's okay, and Danny says, yeah, did it happen to my ex too? And Scott says, yeah, and he goes, then I'm awesome. And it's like, you are paralyzed from a mythical creature, you have a slash over the back of your neck, and your priority right now is that you didn't get served something that your ex didn't get served. It's terrible, but it's also, again, it's totally that thing of, like, these people have the priorities and emotions of teenagers, even though, I mean, Danny doesn't know all the facts, but, and I really loved that bit for emotional reasons, but it's just also a really good example of that point as well.
Yeah, I love that part for Scott's part in all of that, too, just because he was like, wait, and one more question. Are you okay? Like, he really meant it.
Yeah.
And he was honestly looking out for him, and I just really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I love Danny. Can the show be the... Danny has to be the main character next season. I just want it to be all Danny. But, yeah. Okay, I think the last point that we both had was about the Kanama seeking a master.
Yep. And the guidance counselor.
So... what do we think here? Do you think she purposely lied to Allison? Or, I mean, given that, you know, we don't know all that much about her yet, you know, you could definitely take this as a, she didn't know all the facts and she was struggling through it and got it wrong. But we do know that she is pretty hardcore and that she does know what's going on with them. So do you think she purposely lied?
I do. But the thing is, I don't know why. Like,
yeah. Do you think she purposely lied because she's on the hunter's side, or she purposely lied because she's a troublemaker, or like, or
I don't know. I think she is on the hunter's side, but we do know that Jeff Davis said that between the guidance counselor and the vet, they're both not exactly perfect people, but the vet is more on the side of good and the guidance counselor is more on the side of bad. And I haven't trusted her since like the second I've seen her. And she's up to something. I just really think she's up to something, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah. I feel like, and yeah, obviously this is something that happens at the end of the season, but I feel like that her and the vet are both ex-hunters. Like that they were both involved with the hunters in some way and are now both rogue in some way, that they're both independent contractors and make their own choices and morals, but that Morell's might be slightly darker than Deaton's, like that she again, like, is what you said, more on the side of bad and than on the side of good. But why, what, who gains by her misleading them to say it seeks a friend? Like, what, is it just setting them on the wrong path, or, like, is there something more to it than that? Like, is it that she just didn't want them to know that it was being controlled by another person? Like, and if that, does she know who that other person is at this point, or does she know who the other person is going to be? I don't understand.
I don't either. That's why I really don't know what she's up to, but I feel like she is up to something. And I mean, I don't know how different archaic Latin is from classical Latin, but in classical Latin, the word for friend and the word for master are two completely different words. They don't even look similar. So I don't know how she could have mixed those up. You know, I'm pretty sure she did it on purpose, but yeah, I can't figure out why.
I hope that we find the answer.
Yeah.
It's definitely one that I would really like to... I would really like to see the answer to for that one.
All right, we're going to get into the news section right now. And this is sort of the other half that we didn't get to in the last episode. There's been quite a few pieces of news coming out lately, which is all very cool. The first one is a little bit about Allison and a little bit about Derek. First up is that Allison is getting a new potential love interest. And Tyler Posey, who plays Scott, says that so far he hasn't got anybody yet. They just all want to kill him, which is unfortunate. But Allison, on the other hand, may be moving on a little bit quicker than Scott, and E! Online said that she may or may not have a new love interest in season 3, and it may or may not be someone viewers have already met. So what are your predictions for this?
I cannot possibly... May or may not is always meant to imply that, oh yes, she will, and then, oh yes. Like, yeah. It's meant to imply yes for both, but there is not a character on the show that I can imagine her being with currently. Like, who's it going to be? Like, Scott? It's not Scott. It's Cliff. Derek? Like, really? Can we... Her and Derek? Like, really? Like, would that just be, like, him, like projecting Kate feelings? And, like, it's not going to be Derek. Isaac, I doubt if him and Scott are that close.
Right.
Styles?
I can't see that happening.
Styles, right now, is the only one I'm coming up likely with, because they work really well together when they're working to help Scott. Like, the way that they communicate with each other is really interesting to me, but can't really imagine it being Styles. Hang on. Boyd, maybe they vaguely know each other. I mean, Jackson's not going to be there. Matt's not going to be there.
Unless it was like a really minor character that nobody noticed. And like, yeah, you've seen him before. He was in the back of the classroom. Maybe that would make sense.
Like, and it's not Danny, because Danny's gay. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe. Yeah. I got nothing. There's literally not, unless she's turning to a girl, which it could be Lydia. It's probably not Erica, seeing as she's not coming back, but I also quite doubt that. So if it is someone we have seen before, unless it's a teacher, unless it's Harris, you know, he loves every student, God. Apparently, you know, then I can't imagine who it would be at all. What's, like, there's not a character that we've met that it could be to me, so we're going to have to wait and see, I guess. But I'm feeling like that, you know, that this may be more going towards the may not end of someone we've seen before.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of tricky. The other half of this article was about Derek and just the fact that his apartment is going to have furniture, like grown up things, which
Good
is
job,
kind of exciting.
Derek.
And Jeff Davis says most of the stuff he probably found in the trash, which I think is hilarious, because I can't really see him like going to a store and buying the thing, so it makes sense. The other thing is that Zaptuit said they were very sure to point out the fact that he does have a bed and that he will put it to very good use this season. So that's interesting. It has a lot of fans wondering what's going to be going on. We know that Haley Webb is going to be playing his love interest for, I mean, at least part of the season. That's definitely the only information we have about her role so far, is that she's supposed to be his love interest.
Well, you know, whatever. I'm not bothered by him having a love interest. I just don't want awkward Derek sex scenes. So,
yeah,
like, that's what I'm a bit. I'm like, can't it just be that he takes a lot of naps? Like, I'll just laugh. It'll be so awkward, and I'll laugh. So yeah. So there's that. I don't know, Derek. I just can't. And then it also said that, what was it about his teeth as well?
Oh, yeah, they were just going to get a little redesign since last season, which kind of confuses me, because, like, how can you redesign it and not explain it? But it's probably not going to be, like, a huge difference.
Yeah, maybe something more internal, like with how they sit in his mouth, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of Derek, let's just jump right into the Steric or lack thereof, because we found out that Styles and Derek aren't actually going to be interacting a lot in the first half of season 3. And this sort of makes sense, because Derek's got a lot on his mind with the Alpha Pack in town, and we know that Stiles is going to be sort of like a pseudo-detective for the first couple of episodes. So they're both going to be pretty busy, and they probably won't have a whole lot of reason to meet up and talk. But the best part of this article was Dylan O'Brien talking to Zap to it, and he just said, "There aren't any staricky scenes so far, but I had an idea for Jeff that when we do finally meet, and if we have a scene that's very expositional, like if we come together and something's going on, we have to converge and discuss something, then we should kind of stop at the end of it, and before we walk away, Styles should just say, 'I missed you,' just to acknowledge it for the fans in little funny ways."
This has caused an interesting amount of discussion and drama in the fandom, because there are a lot of people who would be like, "Oh my god, this is so thrilling and awesome," and then there seems to be another level of people who may actually seriously really be into the idea of Steric, but who are quite bothered that Dylan said this in a way that they think it is kind of like pandering or queer baiting, like in the kind of way that people have complained that Sherlock does, that they keep making references to things but never actually going there, and that if they want them to go there, they actually want them to go there. And so I've seen a bit of discussion that people who really genuinely want the Steric to be a thing don't like the fact that he said that about it being just acknowledging it in little funny ways. I think that a lot of people would rather kind of have them have their normal levels of interaction, or and if Steric is really going to be a thing, if that is a plot that they actually do end up wanting to use, that it come in a plot-related way naturally, as opposed to being like, let's make a joke because, you know, fans like these characters together, so we're going to actually, you know, make a joke about it. But I think that what Dylan said could be used in a genuine way if it's what they want, if that's what Jeff wants to do with the show, that something like that could actually work, like that he would kind of be like, I kind of imagine it being him, like, not in a, like, obviously a longing look way, but more like in a, like, he's surprised at himself, like Styles is like, "I missed you. Like, I miss, you know, like, I didn't realize that you were someone that I cared about, but I missed you," kind of thing. And
yeah,
it could definitely work, like, in a development of their relationship, whether it was for romance or not, like a development of these are people who work together as a team now, you know, who started out as vague enemies. But I don't know if I'd like it just for the sake of sort of pandering, and I don't think the show would do that, though.
I don't either. I trust Jeff completely in that he definitely knows what he's doing. And he said before that he's not going to make Steric happen unless it's right for the show, because it's going to ruin the show if they just make it happen because that's what the fans want. And we've seen this on other shows, cough, Glee, cough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's got a little bit more sense in that. He knows that people want it, but he's going to do it if he wants to do it and on his own time. So I think Dylan was just trying to be funny. You know, I don't think it's going to turn into a queer baiting sort of thing. And I definitely trust Jeff enough to throw in those little hints and not pander to the fans. I think he can make it work.
I think if there are little hints, it'll be for a reason, not because we're not just because of, you know, trying to keep excited / fans watching or whatever. But,
right.
Yeah, I think that there'll definitely be a reason for it if it does happen. Otherwise, they'll just continue on as they are, you know, as, you know, having their kind of awkward, snarky relationship.
So the next article is an easy one. Basically, what do you think about this nice little picture we got of the twins, the Alpha Pack twins?
Oh, you know, they're very identical, aren't they? Like, I've seen a lot of twins, and sometimes they're not that identical. These guys really look like clones.
They have the same exact haircut,
and in this photo, their expression is the same. They literally look like they've copied one and, like, moved him over, and it's the same person. Why are they standing around in really tight jeans with no shirt? Like, is this just a promotional photo to show them off? But, like, in what like, if this is a scene, what is happening in this scene? Why are they standing there like this? I don't understand. Also, their jeans are also exactly the same. Are they going to walk around in matching outfits all the time?
Oh, God, I hope not. I hate that. I had quite a few friends who were twins. We had, like, 6 or 7 pairs of twins in my grade alone. Wow. And I went to a very small school.
Wow.
And they, like, it's just one of the things that's always bugged me about parents dressing up their twins in identical clothing. So I really hope they don't do that. But, you know, Jeff is a twin, so he's probably aware of that and won't be doing that.
Yeah, I hope they don't, like, make them dress the same.
Yeah.
That would be... they look... I don't know, they look okay. Like, they just... I want to see them, like, moving. Like, I want to see how they are and, like, how they're different to one another, really. I don't really care about their abs. Like, I'm not that fussed about the abs.
The thing that I noticed the most was that they don't look as young as I thought they would, and I'm really glad that they look a bit older and a little bit more intimidating, because when I first saw pictures of them, they have, like, baby faces, you know, and here they look grown up, so I was just really happy to see that.
Yeah, that's true. That does make me wonder if they're going to be going to the school or not. Even their bodies are very developed for people who are meant to be in high school, like... Some shows actually, you know, I mean, not all of the guys on Teen Wolf are quite built, but, like, none of the guys who are in high school are, like, their bodies aren't as quite as hardcore as, say, Derek's, even though the actors are around the same age, because they're meant to be younger, and I've noticed it with other shows, you know, when someone is an adult playing a younger character, they kind of slim their body down or wax their body hair or whatever to make them look younger than they are, you know, like, oh, this is how this person would look at 16, so they're pretty ripped, more ripped than a high school student usually is, so I don't know if they're going to be in the school or not.
We also learned the title of episode 7 of season 3, which is Currents. Do you have any theories about that?
No, but once again, they always trick you with the titles, don't they? They're always like, like, it will be so relevant and we won't know why. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, I've got nothing. Damn you with your clever titles.
I know, really. I was thinking, you know, of all the different currents, like, there's water currents and electrical currents, which could both be relevant, or, you know, there's so many things that it could be that I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to wait until the season starts.
Yeah, and then it'll relate to something emotional as well, like, it'll relate to something, like, emotionally thematic as well as something physical that happens, and, I don't know. They're so clever with the titles, it's so, so smart.
Yeah. Next up, we have a little article about styles, and this was a spoiler that was posted on TV Line, and basically Jeff Davis said that Styles is going to try to find somebody new. He's going to move on from Lydia, which we already knew. But the question is, will it work? Will he actually find somebody else? And Jeff said, his efforts, however, are exactly what lead him and Scott into the new mystery of the season. While other teenagers just discover the pain of heartache, Scott and Styles discover dead bodies. So this is kind of ominous.
So they're saying that he tries to go after a girl and it leads him into the mystery of the season, including dead bodies.
Right.
And we're going to presume this has something to do with Heather, or what do we think?
That was my assumption, that, you know, if Caitlin Custer is playing Heather, that maybe they get together and then she's killed by the Alpha Pack or something, and I don't know. I mean, there's so many ways that they could play this out, but it definitely made me assume that he would find somebody and then that person would die.
Oh, God, no. Please, no. No. Styles can't have a girlfriend that dies. That's not okay. Like, that's not okay. We can't have that. Oh, you're probably right, though. Jesus Christ. Someone significant this season has to die, even if it's someone that's only been introduced this season, because if they're saying the body count's going to be higher than before, I mean, yes, it could just be that they're, like, tripping over more extras you know, that are dead bodies than before, but I feel like we haven't actually dealt with the characters dealing with a death. I mean, we've had Peter's death, who they don't like, and Kate's death, who they don't like, and they're kind of deaths of bad guys. I feel like we're going to have a death of someone good, in inverted commas, if you know what I mean, this season.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see, I suppose, but thanks for that.
Yeah, sorry. Depressing. Our last article here is just a little thing from E! Online where they basically said that there's not going to be any lacrosse in season 3, that it's going to be replaced by cross country. And there were some interesting reactions to this. So what did you think when you first saw this?
Well, I mean, like I said before, like, I think that it's going to be to do with the time of year. The time of year of the sports that the school practices in the winter season and the summer season. Like, some schools have, you know, basketball and football, or baseball and football, and one's a summer sport and one's a winter sport. I don't know why that matters, but that's apparently how sports work. I don't really know. So I assume this is how it goes, that this is going to be their coming back from school summer, and this is the sport of the first half of the year, and it should be interesting. I mean, it might introduce some new characters, I guess, but I do like the lacrosse drama, even though it does seem a bit ridiculous sometimes that, like, the, you know, the drama of the show is based around, you know, stuff happening during lacrosse games. I'm sure they'll make it work. I mean, I'm not crying over it or anything. I'm sure they'll make it work in some way, and it does seem like a natural progression, I guess. But I mean,
yeah,
I was just gonna say, the biggest thing is, like, they, you know, if people, so much of this show takes place having conversations in the locker room, but if they're replacing it with another sport, then I guess it doesn't really matter what the sport is.
Right. Yeah. I like the change. I think that it's realistic, you know. I mean, and cross country can definitely still be interesting. I mean, if they're running through the woods and stuff, that could definitely pose some problems, especially if they have the Alpha Pack lurking out there. And I really want to see Allison take up a sport. And I mean, we know that she enjoys running and everything, at least for fun and to get her mind off of things. So
yeah,
it would be cool to see her being involved like that.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, the most important thing is that Coach is still a coach.
Yeah, I mean, come on. What would we do if Coach wasn't the coach anymore?
Quit the show. You know, yeah. I don't care whether they do Steric or not, I just need the coach.
Yeah.
Okay, was that the last news?
Yes, it was. Okay. All right, and then into our listener feedback really quick. The first one is a really short one, and actually something I hadn't noticed before, but this person just wrote in and said, did anyone else notice on the season 1 DVD case that Derek's eyes are the wrong color? They're the same yellow like Scott's.
I did not, but it was probably made by, like, some, like, person in, like, a computer lab, like, that hadn't even, like, watched the show. Like, they probably, I feel,
right,
like they would have had to check the proofs or something, but, like, yeah, I feel like maybe, you know, the person who made it was not too well briefed in the actual content of the show, or thought it was something that didn't matter.
Right, yeah, and it could have been just one of those things that slipped by them. I mean, he's sort of in the background, and you have to look fairly closely to pick out his eye color, so it is interesting, though, that sort of slipped by, but thanks,
yeah,
for bringing that up. It was kind of a cool little trivia thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is from Tumblr, from Wanderlust, and they say, I feel bad for Lydia in these two episodes. She's the smartest chick, and yet they tell her nothing. She could probably be very useful. I know they are keeping an eye on her, but that is something that has always bothered me. Also, it was kind of creepy that young Peter was stalking Lydia. I don't know why that skeeved me out, but it did make me think of the parallel that is Kate and Derek's relationship because of the age gap. I don't know why I thought of that. Eek, great show.
Well, thank you for the great show and the smiley face and the kisses. That's all very nice. I don't know why they don't tell Lydia anything either. Like, I feel like this would have been the point to be... Allison, like, again, this is exactly the same point of people, these kids, having their priorities, like, that are like, these are my priorities because I'm a teenager, despite the fact that what's going on is, like, crazy. Is that Allison's main point about, oh, you can't tell anyone what's going on, is because Scott and I aren't meant to be together. It's like, not, oh, because Scott's a werewolf and because Jackson is this thing and it's killing people. It's like, oh, no, Scott and I aren't meant to be together, so you can't say anything. I mean, what? On one hand, what? But on the other hand, I totally, if I was a teenager and in love, that would be more important to me as well. Like, I totally actually, like, get it. Like, they really have this priorities thing, like, down, like, in a way that, because sometimes you watch shows and you're like, these teenagers you sometimes wonder, like, why so many adults watch shows about, like, high school dramas, and like, how come you relate more to these teenagers? And it's because they don't actually make them act the way that kids act, but Teen Wolf does a really good job of actually doing that while still keeping it an interesting show for all ages. Like, but I don't know why they don't tell Lydia, like, why they haven't. She's clearly seen stuff, and she clearly has some weird mental health stuff going on that she knows isn't her fault, and they know that she has this crazy stuff going on, so why don't they be like, hey, this is going on, and what's going on with you might have to be to do with it.
I don't know. I wish they would. It probably would have made some things easier. But, okay, am I the only one that liked young Peter and Lydia together?
No, I love it. I love it.
Okay.
I totally love it. People really, people really ship Peter and Lydia together, like even old Peter and Lydia. I think part of it is because Holland Roden and Ian Bowen are either really close friends or dating in real life, and I don't know which one it is. I don't really care either way. I've just been a little bit curious. Like, they always send them out to events together, like that pair of people, and she was in, like, a music video or a short film that he made, like, which was kind of like her, like, lying around in bed in, like, a man's shirt and then, like, getting murdered. It's a bit weird. They have a... It's weird, I'll send it to you later. They have a very close dynamic off-screen, Peter and Lydia, Ian and Holland. So Peter and Lydia is definitely a very interesting dynamic. Not that I can see them together in the long run, but I'm definitely not opposed to the young Peter and Lydia stuff. I like him. I think he's awesome, and I think he's cute, and, yeah, God, maybe Allison's going to go out with Peter. That's someone we've seen before. That's another male we've seen before. Maybe she's going to go out with Sheriff Stalinsky.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to think of males that we've seen before that Allison could date, apparently. Oh. No, I don't think any of those things are going to happen, but I like Peter and Lydia, and it's a bit unfortunate in the way that same way that I like Matt, but no, I'm very interested by Peter and Lydia, mainly because I just like Peter, and he's in all his forms.
He's classy.
He is classy, and he's cute when he's young, and I like him, and he has cool boots, and he has nice jeans, and he has a good face, and I like him. I would... It is a bit weird that he just showed up in her yard, but I'm okay with weird, you know? It's, you know, you gotta take what you can get, and he seemed cool. At the end of the day, he wasn't really threatening her. He wasn't doing her any harm. And so...
Well, at the end of the day, he didn't really exist, so...
Shut up! Oh, you know, all the better, you know? Fictional, imaginary boyfriend. I enjoy him. And, yeah, I didn't mind it because I'm weird. But I've shipped weirder things, so... Yeah, at least it's not, you know, Sheriff Stalinsky and Chris Argent. Yeah, I'm very interested in all things Peter, and it is creepy, but it is not, you know, all is not what it seems, I suppose. I don't know if we'll see any other age-gappy kind of relationships, like the Kate and Derek thing, like Peter and Lydia. I don't know if we'll see any actual age-gappy relationships in the future of the show. I can't really imagine any realistically happening.
If they do, I hope they're healthy relationships. Like, they don't all have to be gross, predatory, you know?
That's true, and that's something that, I mean, like, whatever, this is, you know, Teen Wolf, not Glee chat, but that's something, like, if anyone who's currently been following Glee, that's something that really fascinated me about the recent thing that happened on Glee with Finn and Emma, that I was like, this, I don't think they're going to go there, because I think they're going to, like, fix up her and Mr. Schuster and Finn and Rachel, because they're boring, but I felt like that relationship was the first, they've had a few age gappy things on Glee, and I felt like this was the first one where it was like, these are just two humans who happen to be different ages who could, despite having an unconventional age gap, make a thing work. And that's something that is very rare on TV, but does happen in life, that people have age gaps and, you know, it isn't creepy. Like, that it's, yes, I mean, anyone in school going out with anyone outside of school is a bit weird, but people do have age gaps and have it not be too creepy. And it's not portrayed often that way. It's always portrayed as, like, a predatory thing, like a cougar, or, like, a creepy man, or, like, a student-teacher thing. And you very rarely get, oh, a younger person and an older person who happen to have, despite their differences, made a healthy relationship. And, yeah, it is an interesting thing that could be explored. And I'm not sure if any of the characters on this show would have that, but it definitely could happen, and I would like to see it happen on TV more in general. Not that I have, like, an age kink or anything, I just find it curious. Is there anyone on the show you think could potentially have that relationship with each other?
Oh gosh, not really. I can't think of anybody that isn't, like, already creepy like Harris, you know? Or, like, so not really, but maybe they'll introduce somebody else and make it work.
Yeah, like, if the guys from the Alpha Pack are older than the kids at school, like Ethan and Aiden, like, maybe, like, you know, Ethan and Danny or whatever, like, if he's, like, 20-something and Danny's, like, 17 or whatever, we'll see. I still want that to be, like, a thing where they, like, are like, screw you, Deucalion, and I'm not going to be evil because I'm in love with Danny because he's so awesome.
Here's to hoping.
Yeah.
Okay, so our last little thing here is that we want you guys on our show. We're going to be picking one person to come and guest host with us. Basically, we're going to be discussing episodes 207 and 208, probably on March 1st or 2nd, if everything goes according to plan. You can go to notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com and find our post about it. It gives you details and requirements and an application that it's just really easy. Just send us an email, fill out the things that we have on here, like your name and what time zone you're in and that sort of thing, and just tell us why you want to be on the show, why you like Teen Wolf, why you like the podcast, and we're going to be picking one person to join us on our next episode, so it's going to be really exciting. And this will not be the last time that you can do this, so if you don't get on this time, don't worry about it. We're definitely going to give you some more opportunities to join us, so just hold on and keep watching our Tumblr.
Yeah, and yeah, you should, if you are listening to this, the closing of this should not have closed. The date that's on the Tumblr post is next Saturday, and if this episode doesn't go out on the Friday, we will hold off on closing entries till after this episode gets out. But yeah, we will be recording, yeah, on around those dates that Karen mentioned. So yeah, we'd, you know, obviously be having the answer approximately a week before that. So yeah, hopefully that will be fun for everyone. And that, yeah, you'll basically just hopefully rewatch the episodes just before recording, and then we'll go through with you prior to recording what we need to put, like, what you need to put down, the way that we structure the show, so you are not floundering around. We always like having three people. It makes a good conversational vibe rather than just two people lecturing one another for 2 hours. So, yeah, it's cool. We're excited. So hopefully you guys want to do that. Or if you, you know someone else that might be cool for it, and, you know, you want to recommend it to them, even if they're not sure about the podcast, you could just, you know, show us to them and get them to enter as well. So that's all we have for you now. So we will let you go, and you can turn off your iPod now or whatever it is that you do. So I'll say bye from me. So bye, Karen. Goodbye, listeners. Goodbye, Teen Wolf. Good night, Moon.
Bye.
Bye.
Can you hold on 1 minute? My cat is going crazy and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I think I've got a doctor in my room.
Oh
hold
my
on.
God, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, I totally locked her in my room.
Oh, I'm sorry, cat.
Okay, anyway.